Hey, on this special edition of San Diego Political Podcast from BullersDesk.com, I sat down with Josh Board, movie critic, San Diego native, or has he just been here so long we've made him one of our own? Josh lives and breathes movies. He's the kind of guy that will see 2-3 movies a day. It's part of the reason why I think he became a critic. This way he wouldn't have to pay for it. So he, not only is he a movie critic, but he's cheap. So I set something up and we met over at Polite Provisions again over on 30th and Adams in North Park. I used to call that area North Park unless they've decided to rename the neighborhoods again. But Polite Provisions sat there by the window, talk. He ate a massive meatball sub. And so if you hear any kind of chomping sounds or anything like that, that's Josh stuffing his face. But what we talked about was the influence that politics and has on movies and vice versa. Really what the influence our cultural lives have on our political lives and vice versa. I tend to take a very humanistic point of view and think everything has a political perspective, while Josh tends to think that he can keep those things a little bit more separate. I don't know. I mean, I think what I think, he thinks what he thinks, but I tell you, Josh knows a lot about movies and he knows how to keep things moving forward, even if he doesn't answer my question. So you'll notice that a lot. What he does is he'll go and I'll ask a question, and then he'll just decide that he doesn't want to answer that question, and so he'll just start talking about a random movie, which is pretty funny. I should just try that everyday conversations and see how that goes. But yeah, so it was a lot of fun sitting down with Josh. And as always, if you want to phone in and leave a question for any future political podcast, you can. 619-663-4531. 619-663-4531. And this one, Polite Provisions. Me and Josh Board, Bowler's Desk, Political Podcast, Meatball Sub.
It's popular. It's the media of the masses. I would put TV in the same category as film these days. I don't think you can really separate the two anymore. So I think that I doubt there isn't a politician on the planet that wouldn't give their left nut to be in a major motion picture.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, they would go fucking crazy for that.
You know, yeah. I wonder what are the legalities. You know how, like, if one of these politicians appears on Letterman, he'd have to give equal time to the other politician?
I don't think equal time is required anymore. Are they required? That's company policy.
No.
But I don't think it's legally required by the FCC.
I think it's
anymore.
Legal, but the thing is, you just have to offer it. Like
yeah,
Letterman,
they can turn it down.
Yes, they can turn it down. And I think if it's somebody that knows, okay, Letterman leans this way, I'm not going to go on his show and get crucified. But yeah, it's funny because I wonder if it would do more harm than good. Because you know how you were always seeing Larry King in movies. Like anytime there was a news thing, Larry King's like, aliens are invading.
Yeah.
You know, like a president would or somebody running for office would love to do all those things. But then before you know it, that could totally turn against him. Like, is that all this guy wants to do is be famous and be in movies? And
yeah, but, I mean, isn't that what politics is about these days, right? I mean, you know, you look at the just propaganda of any era, right? I mean, that's what paintings were in the 17th century. That was the propaganda of the media. Goebbels knew that. Goebbels made movies pushing Hitler's agenda.
Yeah.
And so, you know, politicians want to push a particular agenda. Now, the right, like, criticizes Hollywood as always pushing a left-wing agenda, but I don't think that's true at all. I think Hollywood pushes a nihilistic agenda. They're going to make movies that they think people will go see.
Yes,
and that's
exactly.
It. I don't think they push a political agenda. That's why you can just as easily see all of these, what could be easily classified as right-wing,
you know, and it's funny,
apocalyptic fantasies as, you know, a Hollywood film.
Well, I mean, it's a perfect example to what you're saying is I could not believe when Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon did the movie Dead Man Walking. I thought, oh, my God, they're going to shove their liberal agendas down. And they were very fair. They just
really?
Made a movie. Yeah, it was.
It was, you know, kind of this objective. This is.
I mean, they even made Sean Penn a shitheel all the way through, right up till the end. They showed him raping this woman and killing.
Yeah,
so you don't feel
yeah.
like, oh, maybe well, we shouldn't be against for the.
He
death
was
penalty.
Innocent.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think when it comes to movies,
But you know they weren't wouldn't have done that anyhow, right? I mean, because then people would have been like, oh, this is just bullshit.
Yeah, but I think people like that, like I'm convinced people like Sean Penn sometimes just don't get it when it's like they'll go on these political rants, and I'm thinking, what makes you think this is a great career move? You're an actor, gets paid millions. Do you want half the population that doesn't agree with you politically to be against you?
Or like when Clint Eastwood is out talking to his empty chair.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that made him look like a fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
And he alienated half the people.
Exactly.
But then again, he's already made his money. I mean, are they already people that wouldn't go see their movies anyhow, right? I mean, and they should be able to have a political opinion. If they've got one, they should be able to, and if they want to express it.
Well, you know, Ron Silver, I don't know if you remember that actor, because I'm a bit older than you, but he was in Blue Steel with Jamie Lee Curtis, just this really interesting character actor, and he looked a little bit like Andy Garcia, so he'd get leading role parts a lot of times. And he said he was a hardcore Republican, and people always wanted to know his opinion on things because he would talk politics. And he said how his dad knew more about politics than any man he had ever met. But since his dad's a plumber, nobody cared to talk to him.
Yeah.
But because he's an actor, he can, you know, and so, yeah.
So what movie, is there a movie that you think has actually had a political impact?
Lincoln. No, just joking.
No.
You know what? I actually don't think, you know...
I mean, because they've got to have some sort of impact on kind of this collective psyche or that... collective unconsciousness.
I don't think they do. I really don't. I mean, like when you think back to times like Citizen Kane, where, you know, here's this movie about William Randolph Hearst, and then the papers are going to boycott it and all this stuff. I just don't think it's like that anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. I
don't know. That's what I was kind of racking my brain about that, and I started to think about, like, MASH. You know, but they couldn't even make that about Vietnam.
Exactly.
They had to make it
Korea.
About Korea.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Great example.
But at the same time, they were that... But that was reflecting a popular opinion. It wasn't, like, catalyst. Like, you know, the opera was catalyst for a revolution.
Yeah.
Is there a movie that you can think of that would be considered something that's catalyst for a movement, you know?
I really don't think so. I mean, like, even when I think of movies like... I think it was Primary Colors with John Travolta, where he's playing the Bill Clinton character. He's always sleeping with women and stuff. And one of the stories is Robert Duvall, and this town is dumping things into the rivers, and it's polluting them, and Robert Duvall's the attorney. And even movies like that, people just say, well, it's a fictional story. And even if it mirrors something happening in society, it doesn't seem to rally the troops. I don't think people get fired up because they see a movie. I mean, am I wrong about that?
God, in L.A., there was that one movie, and it actually caused a riot. Was it Colors?
So funny you said that. I was just thinking of Colors for a completely different reason.
But, you know...
Because of the gang thing, yes.
Yeah. But it caused something to happen, right?
Yeah.
Now, I suppose you could make an argument that was sort of a sociopolitical loosely... It's not how we think of politics as Republican and Democrat, or even on a global scale.
Yeah, you're just talking more about movies
moving people to action in some way.
Yeah, well, you know, the only other movies I can think of that do that are when they're these The Passion of the Christ and things of that nature.
Yeah, and
because then
religious
you get
movies always
yeah, exactly.
Why are people more willing to accept political narratives as opposed to religious narratives?
Good question. I think it's because, you know, when you knock somebody's religion, I mean... I was baffled. I'm not a big South Park fan. I think it's an okay show. One thing I love about South Park is they always seem to parody something that's just... they're right on top of parodying something. But when they edited out the thing about making fun of Mohammed, I thought, wow. Because they made a decision. It's really not worth us being bombed or somebody being killed because these guys want to... And Trey Parker...
And they were honestly worried that they were going to get...
Yeah.
They were gonna. Well, that happened in... That's happened in France. That's happened in the Netherlands. I mean, I forget the name of the cartoon. And I have friends
talking to you and you brought that cartoon up.
I have friends who work for France 24, and they were worried. That's France 24. It's like a French CNN.
Yeah.
And they broadcast in French, Arabic, and English.
Yeah.
And so outside of France, you either have them on satellite or watch them on the web. They stream live on the web. And that was all the news there because this comic book publisher was publishing a comic that made fun of all of it. But you know what? The week before, they published a comic book that made fun of the Pope.
Yeah.
And is the I think one of the things is, for Americans, it's hard for us to understand that politics and religion are not separate outside of the New World. That's really a New World construct. I mean, even in Mexico, post-revolution, they couldn't separate politics from religion to such extent that they had to ban priests and nuns from wearing their habits in the streets, and there was almost this communist push to purge that country of all religion.
Huh.
In the States, because it's part of our constitution, it's part of our lore, it's part of our national myth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But England doesn't have a separation of church and state. The Queen of England is head of church. She's symbolic head of church, you know. But still, you know, those kinds of things matter. And in France, there's not, while technically there is a separation of church and state, there's a separation in the extent that nobody can have any religion in public. Like in public schools, not everybody's allowed to their own. So it's a whole different way of looking at religion. And then you go into the Middle East, and their entire, or even in the Netherlands, the way their governments are set up are essentially around their religions. You know, in Germany, you've got the Christian Democrats. They have that. In Syria, one of the big problems they have there is their parties were set up basically around religion.
Yeah.
So if you were Christians, you all got together and voted and elected representatives and sent your Christian representatives to the parliament, and then they would do the same thing for the Muslims, the Shiites and the Sunnis and all the different religions that lived there, because it was pretty multicultural.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's for the rest of the world, there's no real separation between politics and religion. So I think it's hard for Americans to see that, and we tend to separate those things, right? Because we will have political movies. Like I was watching this silly movie last night when I couldn't sleep, Shooter. Remember that with Mark Wahlberg, where he plays this
no,
sniper?
I've never seen that movie, but I always use that movie as an example of why movie trailers sometimes suck, because I remember being in a movie, and they showed a trailer for that, okay? And they show Danny Glover, I believe it's Danny Glover, meeting with Mark Wahlberg, who is the best sharpshooter ever in the history of the world, but he's retired, he's living up in the mountains,
yeah,
and he's like, we need you back. There's been this threat on the president's life, and we need you. And he's like, oh, I'm in retirement. We need you. Come back. You need to take out this person. And I immediately looked at the person next to me, and I said, okay, if the president had a death threat here, why do you need Mark Wahlberg to shoot the person that's going to shoot the president? How about you say, the president's not going to appear here. We have a safety thing. And then I thought... Yeah. And then of course he's doing it. And I said, yeah, I bet everybody's going to think Mark Wahlberg is the one that shot the president.
Yeah,
and sure enough, then they show, and it's like, and then the trailer shows the whole movie, and
it's a pretty transparent plot.
Yeah,
but you know, the point was, this guy was betrayed in Afghanistan by the military-industrial complex. There's this, that was sort of the point of the movie.
Yeah,
you know, don't trust Eisenhower's worst fear. You know, but there's no mention of, you know, so it's okay to talk about politics sort of in that context as oppressive, and that's not seen as partisan, right? So you can talk about the political machine, you know, and the one man, and that's, I suppose that's part of the American myth, right? The one man standing up against the great evil and defeating the evil senator and all of that.
Yeah.
But why can't people take sides? They can't take sides and actually have their particular opinion be transparent, you know, without offending people. I mean, Americans are a lot more touchy about politics, I think, when it's presented in that way.
That's true. It's so weird with politics, because I remember being with a group of friends. I had seen Avatar at a press screening, and it blew me away. The 3D was just beautiful. And it's like, the story, it uses like four different movies. Like, oh, there's a... Mm-hmm. There's Dances with Wolves. Oh, there's Terra Firma. Yeah. You know, they borrow from a lot of stuff, but it was just so visually stunning.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was very pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you saw it in 3D and everything?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Movies like that, I would go see
good.
In 3D.
That's a babysitter movie.
Babysitter movie.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
A friend of mine was so bothered because he says, oh, you know, this is like that liberal agenda. They're trying to make us, you know, oh, the people mm-hmm. that want to ruin the... environment and the plant, and that's what he took out of the movie. And it's like, really, dude? You know, that's so weird.
Well,
that you got that, and I understand why he got that. It's like, it's so weird that that's what got him fired up about that movie.
Not just the aesthetic, or
yeah, exactly.
I mean, but is it a bad thing? Right? I mean,
no.
I don't think it's a bad thing that it used to be before modernism in painting, pre what, pre-Ashcan, pre-1910, 1920s. Right. Almost all art was political. You look at Van Gogh, that is an entirely, his work is entirely political. He was a socialist, and he was anti-established religion. He was like a pagan, like a dirt-worshipping pagan.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why whenever you look at his paintings, nature is big and powerful, and man and religion are very small and minuscule. And, you know, and then, you know, the poor are either suffering or unless they're sort of his portraits. So you get that, you know, in those paintings, you get that kind of in Gauguin in a lot of ways, too, along with his pedophilia. But, you know, those elements are there, right?
Yeah.
And then along comes Ashcan and modernism that supposedly takes out all of the content out of the art. And then Warhol kind of brought that into cinema, at least sort of how I, you know, 4 hours of some guy fucking sleeping.
Yeah, exactly.
Which put me to sleep, too.
Yeah.
But in that kind of apolitical nature, aren't they being political?
Yeah. I mean, that's a decent point.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's... Or how about this? The New Yorker wrote this great article about how they saw... This woman made this argument how the new Star Trek is an anti-drone allegory.
Wow. See, that's so weird.
How that's the message that she took out of J.J. Abrams, that these guys were all essentially these mindless drones killing
machines.
See,
that's
machines
so funny
these...
because there are movies that have done that, like with the movie Moon, Sam Rockwell plays a guy that's a clone. And so it's this whole thing at the end where is it right to clone people just to have them be working slaves, you know, because they are basically people just because you're using them for that. And so
extras.
Yeah, exactly. But
you want your dishwasher, right?
Yeah, but it's odd. And Cloud Atlas tried to touch on that, the Tom Hanks movie. Which
I didn't
kind
see
of,
that.
You know, it's funny because people either loved it or hate it. Time Magazine called it the worst movie of the year.
Yeah.
And I thought it was disappointing, but I didn't hate it because it had some concepts that were interesting. The problem it had was some of the concepts have been done before. So it's supposed to be, they do like 8 different stories, and one of them is in the future in Korea in like the year 2183 or something. And they clone these women to be waitresses, and so guys will grab them because they're really good-looking and stuff, and then one throws a drink in this guy's face because he's really being too abusive, and then they're going to kill her. And then I think one of the guys that owns the restaurant where these women work sleeps with them because, you know, you clone these gorgeous women, you might as well rape them, you know? So that stuff would all be powerful had you not seen it before in a movie. So, and then the movie just does a few things that just kind of you roll your eyes and go, oh, God, you know?
Yeah. Like, now, is there a genre that handles politics better than other genres? Like, does sci-fi handle it better?
You know, that's a good question. I really don't know. It's funny with political movies. Sometimes, like, I got so excited about seeing the movie Ides of March, the George Clooney-produced movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ryan Gosling.
It
was just an average movie, and it had a few brilliant scenes. But it's so weird because here's George Clooney running for president. He's this great politician, and then they go down these paths where you're like, oh, really? Okay, he's got to sleep with the intern. It's like, you know...
It's just predictable.
Yeah, it's not so much predictable. It's just as like, it's not really powerful anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, and then it's like cliche. And it's so... And like Philip Seymour Hoffman is such an interesting character because he's this old school... You know, he used to work for this politician in a small town who was really loyal. And he's trying to explain to Ryan Gosling why he should be loyal. And there's some brilliant scenes. But you're like, wow, this is a movie... I mean, it got so much Oscar buzz before it came out. And then when
because
it came out, everybody was... Yeah, exactly, because of the cast. And George Clooney produces some really good movies. But, but it's just, it's weird that they... I don't think they're really good at nailing good political movies. I mean,
I always look at sci-fi as being the only genre that can safely deal with contemporary politics in a way that's not going to be seen as offensive by a lot of people, right? Well, the good thing, like, God, that sci-fi show, Continuum, cop in the future, they've run out of all of their resources in the future, and she goes back in time and is stuck in our time. So it's this out-of-time kind of thing, and they're hunting the bad guys here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and she has her political agenda, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no Fourth Amendment's always in question. Like, that's something that always happens in movies, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially cop movies. There's no Fourth Amendment in cop movies.
Yeah, yeah.
They just don't exist.
Right.
You know? So you get to deal with terrorism. They get to deal with those things.
Right.
And not have it be the Arabs, which is so fucking predictable.
I know.
And I can't, I, it just drives me
You know, there's a movie recently, and I can't.
I'm not offended because they're right. Stereotype. I'm offended because it's fucking obvious.
I know, you exactly. Know?
I mean,
exactly.
It's like, okay, the Arabs are terrorists, okay. I mean, you know.
Yeah, there's a movie recently, I can't remember the name, but it was a week or two ago that I saw it, and they had Arab terrorists, and I was like, whoa. I would think in this day and age, like, they wouldn't want to go there just because they'd think...
But it's so easy, right?
I know, exactly, I mean, especially now, you know.
You got to feel horrible. I wonder how many casting agents have like, that book that just kind of people that look vaguely Arab. I mean, most likely they're Hispanic, but
yeah,
they look like they... You know,
exactly.
Like, yeah, it's just so obvious when they go that route. And then when they try and deal with these headier political issues, it comes off so heavy-handed. And it lacks any kind of finesse.
You know, and it's funny because I think about when I've seen movies where it packs a political punch, it's always a movie that isn't politically driven, but there's some side plot. Like one that comes to mind, and you're going to think this is goofy. Did you ever see the Stephen King movie Dead Zone with Christopher Walken?
Dead Zone.
Christopher Walken Dead Zone. Basically has this power. He gets in a car accident, and he's in a coma for 8 months. Or maybe he's going for a few years.
I did see the movie. And there was the show with...
I never saw the show with the three-named guy from the 80s.
Yeah.
Michael Anthony Hall.
I did see the show.
I did see the movie. And
yeah,
I love the fact
like
that... So Christopher Walken can tell people's future when he shakes their hand.
Yeah, he touches sometimes them and you can see in the future. Right. And then he sees this guy that's going to become the next Hitler or
the next president, basically.
Yeah.
And so... But he sees that this guy's going to become president.
And he's...
And he's going to start World War III, and he's evil.
Yeah.
So when he talks to this, like, university professor saying, if you could go back in time and kill Hitler, and this guy says, well, why would you not do that? Of course. But if you do that, you know, and then there's that whole thing, you know, the butterfly effect, and do you change anything in the future, you know. But Christopher Walken kind of goes, yeah, you know what? I'm going to kill him because, you know, if you can go back in time and kill Hitler, who cares? Whatever happens, happens. And so, you know,
the thing about that kind of stuff, the conversation that it doesn't bring up, excuse me, the conversation that it doesn't bring up is, and I think Thin Red Line, remember that movie Thin Red Line?
Oh, God, Terrence Malick, yeah.
Yeah. And it started to bring up this conversation, and it was in not a great way, but it started to bring it up about, they always bring up the Hitler analogy, but, you know, it's, the truth is while we were fighting fascism didn't die after Hitler.
Yeah.
You know, Franco died of old age. And he was a kill all the Jews, murdered millions of people, fascist. And he died of old age in power in Spain.
Yeah.
And the same, you could say, happened in Russia. So, you know, they were communist, but they were still essentially murderers.
Right.
So that analogy with Hitler has always kind of bothered me because it's like this great rally cry for Americans because we know that Hitler was bad and it's such an easy get too.
Yeah.
You know, but we never want to question that whether or not, not killing Hitler, but what did we accomplish? Did we actually accomplish what we wanted to accomplish with that war?
Yeah.
And it's so rare that people want to bring up that kind of conversation. And I think that's what sci-fi tries to do in a lot of ways because they always have this dystopia kind of fascist future, like Gattaca or something along those lines.
Exactly,
You know, and where they try to ask those questions without necessarily doing it in this heavy-handed way that makes everybody feel bad about their grandparents. You know, because, you know, let's face it, you know, killing Hitler, you know, was good.
Yeah.
You know, the guy was an asshole and he deserved it. I'm not saying he didn't deserve it, but it wasn't the end of fascism.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the end of fascism in Central and South America.
You know,
I mean, you look at Argentina, you know. And so those are the kinds of things that I always wonder about, you know. I mean, that's kind of what was that? Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, that movie.
Evita.
That's what Evita was about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and but we never deal with that sort of the political realities of those things. It's like as Americans, we're kind of afraid of that kind of obvious political discussion for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that I think we're afraid of the religious discussion for some reason.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to kind of, I suppose, explore more is why is it we're afraid to do that? You know, I was listening to the Marin podcast on the way over, and they're talking about how politics sort of became the new sports in radio, right? And then and now sports is becoming the new politics, and people are stepping away from that. And it's still just about the performance, and they're obsessing over the performance of the thing. They're not talking about the substance of the thing.
Right.
And that kind of is an even bigger throwback for any art nerds that are listening to kind of this Greenbergian notion of, you know, the surface and the process matters and not what you're saying, which is what Pollock was sort of about, even though in his own head he was saying, oh, I'm, you know, infusing these paintings with my transcendental spirit or whatever shit he was fucking talking about. No, it was pretty fucking colors on a canvas, and that's all the world saw.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but at the same time, that was apolitical, and it was political.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm trying to kind of take a broader kind of cultural sort of humanistic look at why is it we can have these great, and a lot of them are great movies, even if you don't agree with them, and not, I mean, Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged, that's a blatantly libertarian movie and book. You know, and it's okay to put that one out there. People kind of still kind of back away because it's like they're afraid to talk about those things.
Yeah. You know, did you ever see the movie Absolute Power, where Gene Hackman was the president and Clint Eastwood is this thief who's burglarizing a house and he sees the president kill this woman he's having an affair with?
I did.
I really liked that movie. And I just finished reading a book by the guy who wrote that movie. And this guy, William Goldman, I think his name is, he's written all these movies like The Princess Bride.
Yeah, yeah,
he's written
yeah.
some great movies, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid and Misery mm-hmm. and a lot of stuff. And he was disappointed with the movie, but you know, to me, I don't know. It's so much more interesting when you're not trying to have some agenda, or you're doing some completely fictional story. And you have a politician in there that's, you know.
I don't know. I mean, do you watch a lot of international films? Do you feel like international films can deal with these issues in a more obvious manner than domestic?
Yeah, you know what's funny? Somebody just pointed this out to me a month ago. I was mentioning that because I don't, a lot of French movies I see I don't like. and the person was going, oh, you don't like subtitles? I go, no. I love, and I started
you,
naming
you
all these.
You can read, I will vouch for you. Yeah.
And I mentioned these movies I loved, like, you know, this Iranian movie, A Separation.
You didn't like The Visitors? I love The Visitors.
Yeah.
The original? Have you seen the original? With the Gerard Depardieu? The original, The Visitors. Remember, they did the remake, and they were in Chicago, and it was Gerard Depardieu in Chicago. But the original, they were in France.
I don't think I saw it.
The fucking cool thing about that movie is they did it in medieval French.
Whoa.
So these guys were actually speaking medieval French. They weren't speaking like French. So my wife's trilingual, so she speaks fluent French,
yeah.
And she's like, she had no fucking clue. It's like old English. That was what was cool about it. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I found a movie you haven't seen.
That's funny. Of course,
it's a French movie, and you'll probably hate it.
But what this person pointed out to me is they said, well, you can't necessarily say you like foreign films. I said, why not? Usually when I see them, I like them. He says, yes, but you're seeing the ones they're releasing here because they're the best of the best. Like, usually when a foreign film gets released here, it was one that was nominated for an Oscar for Best Foreign Film.
These days, you think that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I
kind of don't feel that way. I feel like the internet and, you know, Netflix, and you can have access to so much stuff.
True. Yeah,
you know?
you definitely
There's
have
so
access to
stuff. There's so many bad foreign films out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really bad ones.
Yeah, I guess I'm just more talking about what's released in theaters and, you know, the landmark theaters
here are usually the ones that carry those. Sure, okay. And then they're niche, too, right? They're art house. They're not the AMC in Paris. And they have that equivalent in that film machine, you know?
Right.
Too, so. But, so you don't like them? Because of that, or
no? I mean, I'm hit and miss with them. Usually, when I see a foreign film, they're usually pretty good. But I don't necessarily notice the whole political thing because.
Do you think it's been trained out of you when you watch these things, kind of to not just to look at sort of the narrative and the story and the flow,
yeah,
and whether
I think
or not
maybe
you're comfortable?
So. Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it. That's probably the case.
Are you scared of
this is like talking to my psychiatrist. Josh, tell us.
Are you scared of politics?
Yeah. No, I
because I watch stuff all the time and I have that mind, and that's part of the reason why I'm in news.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I see a lot of the times. Yeah. I see those politics.
It's so weird, the things that'll pop out of me. Like, you just brought up Pollock, and I was thinking about how when I saw Pollock, you obviously saw the movie.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah, great movie. Great movie.
I would love one of the paintings Ed Harris did.
Oh, so would I.
I get into weird things like that because you know he did a bunch of those.
Oh, yeah. And it's because anybody can fucking do it.
Exactly.
But you could go home and do whatever you wanted to.
But I like the fact that he did it and he played it. I would.
And he was in character while he did it.
Exactly.
He should go around the country just being
in character. And I love the fact that I would have it framed nicely. And I do that thing where you put in your living room, if you have nice art, where you have the little light that shines directly on that picture.
Yeah.
And people would say, that's not a Pollock, is it? I'd say, well, technically, yes, it is. It's technically a Pollock. But the one scene that I always think about in that movie is when Jeffrey Tambor plays this character who's like his manager or something like that, or he sells his paintings. And he comes over and they're having this dinner party, and he looks at the latest creation of him, and he goes, well, that's really good. He goes, but it really needs some blue. I think blue was the color, he said. It just needs some blue in it. And he takes it and goes in the other room, and he's going to put blue in it, and he goes... And he's furious that he was about to do it because some idiot that knows nothing about art or not as much as him, you know, and he wouldn't because he said it's perfect the way it was. I love that scene.
In that movie, there's a critic, and it's modeled after...
Maybe that is him. I said manager, but it could have been an art critic.
It's a critic, and it's modeled after Greenberg, who was a famous critic out of that era.
Okay.
He was sort of the critic of the day. And if he wrote about your work and was favorable about it, but he was a modernist, and he was also a Zionist, and he was... So in a lot of ways, he's seen as sort of an American, you know, for lack of a better term, an American fascist who was pushing that all surface, no content, art for the machine kind of mentality that he was, you know. And then, you know, and that's a lot of what I think that the beatniks started to kind of rebel against, which is, you know, part of the reason why I think beatniks became so popular, because of their independent nature and how that is reflected on American culture.
Right.
You know, so, I don't know. I don't know if that helps anyone
at all.
What
are some of your favorite political movies?
About politics, I'd have to say I love, you know, any of the Bourne movies, you know.
That's weird that you consider the Bourne movies political.
I consider them very political.
Wow. I totally understand why.
Yeah.
That's just weird to me that you...
I look at the Bourne movies and I see them as political. And almost anything sci-fi, I think, is...
Yeah, well, I...
Almost
I,
anything
yeah.
sci-fi, I think, has a huge political...
It's so funny how we have totally different definitions of that. Because if you were to say to me, like you did say to me, we're going to talk about political movies, I think, okay... Kevin Kline and Dave, where I'm thinking of presidents,
Anthony Hopkins
played Nixon. You know, it's like I go down this path that they have to be a president.
Uh-huh.
You know, where you're being more broad and which is you're accurate.
Yeah, well, that's just the way I see it. What'd you get? Is that from next door?
I got a meatball sandwich.
You got a meatball sub from what is that? Meat and soda, or pork and sub. I forget the name of the place.
I don't know. It's called the Bovine. I didn't realize they had multiple meatballs here to choose from.
Look at that. That looks fancy, man.
I'm going to try to do this thing that I've never tried
before. That's like a high-end meatball sub.
Which I thought I would try to go for a bite of this while you're saying something like, well, you know...
I'm going to take a picture.
When I watched Dr. Strangelove and Peter Sellers was playing three different characters, I thought, oh, this will be a chance for me to take a bite of it.
No, I'm going to take a picture of this meatball sub to put on the blog, too.
Should give you a free one for doing that.
Yeah, I know. No, they've been very nice here, letting me come in, and they get pretty crowded here too. So, and then they make all their fancy. Here we go, and your meatball sub. Let's see if that worked. Look at that.
Does Mark Maron ever eat food when he's doing a podcast?
You know, I'm sure he does. I haven't asked him. I'll have to ask him. You know. Look at that. That's a pretty fancy meatball sub. Yeah, they let us come in here and make a mess at Polite Provisions. And when I first came in here, I kept calling it Polite Perversions. But then I ate them. I don't even know if that's possible. Excuse me. I am perverted. But very politely. I suppose the English have polite perversions.
All right, so I want to hear your top five political movies of all time.
Oh God, of all time!
And I will be interrupting you to interject what I
interject
like
while you eat. You know, I made a list. I do have a list. But you know, the thing is that like I said, they're all like I think Gattaca is super political.
That's true.
And I really liked Gattaca. And of course, I loved when I was a kid. I loved Oliver Stone, Salvador.
Oh,
and I thought that was a really, really political
movie. I think that was James
movie.
Wood's first movie. What a that's a great movie. Oh, really? No, maybe it's not his first movie, but it was one of his early pictures. Yeah.
And now, unfortunately, I can't think of James Woods without thinking about Family Guy.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
and I can't think of Oliver. See, Oliver Stone is one of those that he went
he
down
went
that
bonkers,
path of.
Didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
He went bonkers.
It's
I
like,
mean,
dude, are you? Oh.
You know, I mean, look, and you could say, I mean, even with his whole Kennedy was killed by they kind of thing, he tried to build this mythical mystery they. But I don't, I mean, you know, that seemed easy in a lot of ways, too. You know, of course, you know, I mean, anything Michael Moore, right? Fahrenheit 9/11, Bowling for Columbine, those are all really, really political.
Well, my current rant.
He's always political. But he's so kind of biased. He's got that National Review kind
of. Well, what I don't understand is why people didn't rebel against Michael Moore movies, documentaries, a long time ago, because he puts things in them that are bogus, and he edits things out of context. And I think
that's
once,
absolutely true.
And to me, these shouldn't be nominated for Oscars for Best Documentary once you start doing that. I mean,
yeah. I remember, there's a certain philosophy I think you really should be following when you're making a documentary.
I do, too. And just really bothers me. I just saw a documentary this morning that was wonderful about background singers and how they never get famous. And it's called 20 Feet from Stardom. And it was brilliant. To me, you can do documentaries about things that are interesting. And a lot of the topics Michael Moore picks are very interesting.
Yeah.
But when you edit things out of context, I remember being in a movie theater. And I forget which one it was. But they show George Bush saying, yes, communism is important. We've got to stop terrorism. And then he goes, now watch this shot. And he whacks a golf ball. And everybody goes, oh, that's so horrible. 9/11 just happened.
Yeah, well, and that's not what
exactly.
When it happened.
And it was way before.
Yeah. I mean, you can criticize Bush, I think, totally legitimate. Primary colors. That's John Travolta. Primary colors. You could criticize Bush totally legitimately for being in that kindergarten class and not quite knowing how to react when all that. And those are absolutely legitimate. But yeah, he pulled that thing totally out of context.
Yeah,
and they should be following. He should be following rules. You know, there has to be kind of an authenticity because you are presenting things. How many people get their history out of movies? I mean, and it's not. It's real to an extent. But it's not, it's you know what I mean? You can't, that's not history. That's...
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially the JFK movie is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Oliver Stone had to create a character to help tie loose ends together.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was this funny thing on the internet. A girl did a book report. She's not really a teenage girl. Had to be an adult because it was too well written. But it's a teenage girl doing a book report on The Great Gatsby. And it's basically a review of the movie as if she was doing a book report, like she was assigned to read the book, and instead she sees the movie. And it's hysterical.
Well, when we're in high school, Great Gatsby's another great example, right? Everybody reads The Great Gatsby, and you kind of talk about sort of the politics of the era.
Uh-huh.
And do you think that movie kind of reflected that, or did they shy away from it because they didn't want to touch on that? Because you could make parallels between The Great Gatsby and today with the recession and the 1%, all of those things very easily, you know.
Well, you know, they definitely shied away from that, but I don't think it was a conscious effort.
No.
Because this filmmaker, he's the guy who did Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
He was just, and he had $150 million he spent on this, and he wanted to make the most elaborate, crazy party scenes, and they were fun party scenes. I just don't think he had a political bone in his body, because in actuality,
Do you think they're being chosen? Do you think he got that because of that?
No. I think, I don't
because,
think so.
I mean, you know, when you read that book, it's a huge
political
book.
Right, it's
a
whole thing. What do they call it? The East Egg or the West Egg? Or what?
Yeah.
They use the word egg, and I can't
believe like the Easter Egg or I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the rich and the different classes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they don't even touch upon that. And it's weird. I have
that's
this,
a huge part of that, you know?
I mean,
1980, or what was the other one, the Brave New World, that is along those same lines. I mean, did you read that in high school?
No.
No, Brave New World's sort of like that. It's a class movie. There's alphas, there's betas, you know, and everybody has their place, and nobody's supposed to transcend there. And, of course, the one guy decides to transcend, and, you know. But, so it had a similar thing, you know, where they were dealing with class in a very similar way, which is why people a lot of times read those books back to back.
Well, you know, let me ask you this. I remember a Republican friend of mine, he hated the American president because he's like, well, they're trying to make this liberal president, and they're trying to, you know, and I'm like, it's a fictional story, and if you're doing a fictional story, you've got to, you know.
Well, you know, in the West Wing, they made that argument that they had to make him a Democrat because people wouldn't like a Republican as much.
Exactly.
But then they brought in John Goodman, and John Goodman played the House Majority, and who, for some reason, was able to fill in as the president for 4 months or something like that while this president was off having an operation because of the order of succession, and the vice president was out, and there was this big political to-do. And so John Goodman got to go in and play, and people loved him. You know, he was a Republican, but he was a very, you know, like an idealistic Republican.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people... I think a lot of people don't, at their core, don't have a problem with a lot of the ideals of what that is, you know. And I don't think they have a problem with a lot of what the sort of democratic idealistic vision of themselves is, but their idealistic vision and the realistic vision are two very different things.
Well, I don't know why more people don't. Like I remember when Warren Beatty came out with Bullworth, and. God, Halle Berry looks so hot in that. She had the worst hairdo ever. She had her hair in dreads, and she still looked beautiful. But I remember people complaining, like, oh, you know, this liberal agenda. I just didn't like the movie because I didn't think it was very good.
Yeah, and it was just kind of stupid.
Yeah, and it got a lot of buzz.
But Dave was hilarious.
I thought Dave was hilarious. Brilliant. And so to me, I just go with
the
stories.
And that was that era when it's around Bill Clinton when all those movies were kind of coming out at the same time.
Yeah,
wasn't
they
it?
Did have a lot of
It was just all these presidential... Weird presidential.
I think that's just a weird coincidence, probably.
I always wonder. I don't know enough about how the industry works.
I mean,
works.
You know, it's just weird coincidence. It's like, I mean, I don't know if you remember the time that the Truman Show came out. The same time the Truman Show came out, EdTV came out a few months later.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're both about reality shows where they follow an actor. Mm-hmm. And how reality shows go too far.
Truman shows more of a surrealistic look, and Ed shows more of a
regular guy. Yeah. So I just think sometimes there happened to be a crop of good presidential movies then, because, I mean, I think Dave and American President are both good movies.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, Truman Show and Ed are a lot more closer to reality these days.
I know. did you ever see, you know what I hate? Sometimes, I don't know how your parents are with old movies, but they might rave about a movie, and my stepdad loves old movies. But 9 out of 10 that he recommends are just unwatchable. Either they're just too dated or they're horrible. But occasionally he'll have a movie, like, I remember when I was a kid and he had me watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
That was
like,
a great movie.
Great movie.
That was
I really liked it.
Yeah. Or was there, what was the one with the flubber and the flying car? And was that Mr. Smith? There was, I think, Flubber. There was like a Flubber 2. I remember this from the 50s. He's flying on his way to Washington to get his patent back so the government won't seize all the flubber and he'll be able to solve everyone's problems. And I remember he proved he was American. He's flying in his Model T, his flubber-powered Model T. He proved he was American to the airplanes that were following him by opening his wallet and showing them all of his credit cards.
That just reminded me of a scene in... Did you ever see... by the way, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 40.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm about
your
age.
For some reason, I thought you were like 15 years younger than me. God dang it, you bastard.
It's the red hair and the freckles, man. It's a phenotype that people don't typically
That's going to go against you when you turn like 68. Because like Robert Redford, holy crap, when he got like 63, you're like, is he 98?
I got to stay out of the fucking sun.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. My mother's not doing so bad. I'm not too worried. It's like I said, it's a phenotype that does well as long as you stay out of the sun, right?
Well, anyway, you reminded me of a scene. And this is an old movie my stepdad didn't like and I absolutely loved. Did you ever see Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Worry and Love the Bomb? It's this great political movie that Stanley Kubrick did with Peter Sellers playing three different mm-hmm, characters. Mm-hmm. And this one guy's obsessed with starting a war. Oh, my God, you have to see it. I think it was like 1965 or something, 63.
Yeah, there was an era there where those kind of came out.
And right.
That was with Agent Orange. No, not Agent Orange.
Clockwork Orange?
Clockwork Orange and all those movies. They were deliberately kind of political, but they were dealing with kind of these baby boomer issues. So
yeah, that's a movie, though, you got to seek out. And then it's funny, Peter Sellers did another movie. It was the last movie he did before he died. Did you ever see Bean there?
No, I didn't see it.
I think it was 1980 when he did it. And it's not political. Like, basically, it's funny. When Forrest Gump came out, some critics some critics brought up, oh, this is a lot like Bean there. Because basically, Peter Sellers plays a gardener for a rich guy who's mentally challenged. Yeah, yeah. He's really slow.
Right.
Well, the billionaire dies. Now, all of a sudden, the family takes over his mansion and everything. They go, yeah, we don't need you as a gardener anymore. So here's a guy who's mentally challenged. He had a guest.
They just send him off into the wild.
Yeah, he's just walking the streets, and these gang members want to beat him up. But then he doesn't know how to even communicate with people, mm-hmm. and he loves watching TV. He's obsessed with it. But he always says the right things to get out of jams with the gang members. Like, they go, what are you doing in our turf? And he'll say something that has nothing to do with that. And they go, oh, my God, he's working with the Crips or whatever. And then they're afraid of him. And Shirley MacLaine plays the president's wife, and her limo backs into him and breaks his leg. But they don't want it to come out because it'll hurt his campaign. They bring him back to the White House, and they stitch him up. And she wants to have an affair with him. Mm-hmm. And because he's obsessed with TV, they go to the bedroom. And he gets the remote control, and she goes, what are you doing? He goes, I like to watch. She goes, oh, you do? And so she starts pleasuring herself while he's watching TV, and she's on the floor and doesn't realize, and she's getting so into it, thinking he's watching her, and he's watching TV. But he ends up saying some things to the president. I think Jack Warden was the president, I forget. But he'll say these things that end up solving world problems. And it's so brilliant because he's really just a slow man.
Yeah.
But he thinks, oh, he's just profound.
He's just
He just says what he needs to say. He doesn't know it.
So do movies, last question.
Yeah.
Do movies reflect or do they
you know,
cause change?
They definitely.
Can they?
Yeah.
I mean, because I can tell you, you know, there's that opera. That was seen as the catalyst for the Belgian Revolution. Raft of the Medusa, seen as a hugely political painting that was critical of the state and used as
I think
means.
We live in a day and age where that's just not the case. I mean, you know, I was arguing with some old guy who said, oh, the actors today, they're not even as good looking. We had Cary Grant and we had Clark Gable and you got Brad Pitt, you know, and he starts naming all these actors. I said, you know what else you guys had? You guys had stars that the publications wouldn't write dirt about them. You had a movie like, you know, if Gone with the Wind came out, it stayed in the theaters for 8 months, and that was the only movie you could go see. Now we've got 8 different movies, 14 different, 20 different movies if you go to the AMC in Mission mm-hmm. Valley. I don't think movies have that impact anymore because of that. There's so many movies out, and so, you know, I don't think anything's going to get anybody fired up anymore. Even if you took a documentary, if Michael Moore did a documentary that exposed some crazy thing in the White House, do you think people would get that rallied up about it?
Yeah. Or,
I mean, I just don't think it's the case anymore. Maybe it's because we have so many mediums, we got so many TV channels, we got so many films to choose from, that I just don't think it and I could be wrong about that, but I just don't think it's, you know.
Mm. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's it. Enjoy your meatball sub. That's a Nerdist. That's it.